Welcome aboard this week's podcast of Dudes Dish Disney. Get ready for amazing attractions across America. Beer halls and bar rooms, banquets and beverages, a collection of characters and colleagues.
No cupcakes.
It's Dudes Dishing Disney. This episode of Dudes Dish Disney is sponsored by Magic Vacations. Magic Vacations. Discover the magic of travel. And now your hosts, the dudes of Dudes Dish Disney.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dudes Dish Disney. Joining us today is Jonathan, our producer, the resident tech dude.
What's going on, guys?
Also joining us is Ryan, our co-host. He is the number one Disney dude.
Hi, dudes.
And I'm Congo Carl, former Jungle Cruise skipper, here to guide you through this week's episode of Dudes Dish Disney.
Sorry, Carl. I had to tone it down there. You were way too hyped for this, and I needed to mellow out the mood a little bit. I'm excited as much as you are, but good Lord, man, you're going crazy.
You know why I'm excited?
I have a rough idea.
Happy New Year, dudes!
one too many pops of the champagne cork, I see.
Yeah, I guess the alcohol is still flowing over over his house.
It could just be the champagne corks that popped off the side of his head. Maybe he was concussed and now he's just kind of silly old grandpa like we always thought he would be. Now he's just there. It happened faster.
And how were your holidays?
Oh, they were great. Thank you, Carl.
Yeah, they were damn good. Yeah,
that's good. And can you believe we're starting our fourth season of this podcast?
I can't believe we could stand each other for that long to talk on a weekly basis for 4 years. I'd love to actually, you know, I just thought about this. I was talking to my wife about this and the fact that we're getting on 4 years here, and I was talking about how we all met. You know, and I don't know that we've ever really given a true breakdown of how each of us individually met, other than, you know, we all worked for Magic Vacations and we hung out and whatever. But like, I very distinctly remember meeting both of you face to face, right? So something maybe we can share at some point later this season that
I'm curious now, because I don't know. I don't know if I was in a state to remember those details. I do remember meeting Jonathan. So you remember meeting both of us, and I remember meeting Jonathan. So that would cover everything. So
now, you know what's funny is that Jonathan actually had a much bigger impression on me than you did, and I was talking about that with a friend of mine last week who listens to the show, and he's like, "How did you meet these guys?" And John, I don't know if you remember the story of the first time you and I actually spoke, but it was pretty boisterous on your end.
If I remember correctly, I mean, it's kind of out of character for me, to be honest with you, what the story is. And it's kind of funny because that's not really like me. And again, I wasn't partaking in any beverages or anything. I was sober at that point.
So, totally sober he was. Yes. Yeah. We'll save that. That's a teaser for you guys for a future show, how the dudes met. It was definitely out of character. It was my first impression of you, John, and I couldn't have been more wrong.
All right, so let's dive into that on next week's show a little bit. So
yeah,
now you've got my curiosity up, but Ryan is, and I'm gonna have to think about it a little bit before we record to think if I recall all the individual nuances of meeting. But here we are, and I do believe that, you know, season four is inevitable, and for us, because I think it works. I also think, you know, dudes play together better than dudettes. It's just a fact. You know, a bunch of dudes can get along a lot easier, and sometimes, you know, dudettes can't. So sometimes dudes podcasts go longer than dudettes podcast. Just saying. So
shots fired.
Wow. All right.
This is the way we're starting this new year. Yeah. All right.
All right. So there's a tip of the hat to 4 years ago, but it's been a wild ride, as they say. And here we go. Here we go with season four. So on this week's episode, it's another installment of The Business of Disney. And today's topic is the return of Bob Iger. So, you know, it was just all in the news right around after Thanksgiving. All the news came out. And as the news came out, Twitterverse exploded. There were people cheering in the parks as Disney reappointed Bob Iger as its chief executive. So it abruptly replaced his handpicked successor, Bob Chapek. And this is kind of interesting. So they brought him in. He's got a 2-year contract to be in place. And his primary goal that we'll talk about is to select and handpick and groom his successor, right? And it's interesting because he did that with Bob. It didn't work so well, but they're trusting him to do it again. So we could talk about that a little bit. But if you think about it, you know, a lot of the things that were going right or going wrong were carry-ons of his initial solutions. And so he's going to be facing some really quick challenges in the business. And we'll talk about maybe, you know, what we think he's going to do in those challenges. But right now, the media industry and his executives are observing and putting together kind of a roster of those, you know, potential Iger candidates, and what are they going to do about it? Meanwhile, the fans, the park fans, are thinking about change. And what is he going to do short-term, long-term about change? There's some things that have been popular and unpopular in the parks, popular in the sense from the stockholders, we like this, but very unpopular to the guests and the fans. And they're counting, I think, on Iger to make some changes. Well, I don't know if he really will or not. We could talk about that. And the other thing that we can talk about really is Disney's overall business. I mean, let's face it. When Bob Iger set it up and he transferred, they're a media mogul. And the revenues were expected to pivot and come from all that media entertainment, right? Disney Plus and the conglomeration of everyone that they bought, you know, Fox, National Geographic, Hulu, all of those pieces together and building that. So that's going to be a big cornerstone because he was part of that and how he continues to grow that. But in the meantime, the parks have been the darling of revenue, saving some of those challenges. So it's all mapped out there, right? But he's been brought back and this is thrust upon us. So let's kind of chisel away at these one-on-one. I think the one that most of our fans are going to be most curious about that we can talk to, and I think we're all prepared to talk to, is the parks, right? Let's talk about some of the things that are around the parks that the rumors are that, well, now that Bob's back, we're going to make these changes. What are some of them that you guys have heard of and your thoughts on them?
So one that I've seen a lot of people talk about, and again, I think it's more rumor than any real true fact with it, is getting rid of Genie and going back to the FastPass system. I don't think Genie's going anywhere because, again, it's a revenue stream for Disney. For one, brings in extra revenue for folks in the park. Even though a lot of people hate it and a lot of people would love to go back to the free FastPasses, again, it's a revenue stream. People are buying it. People are paying it. Even since Disney's upped the price and has that flexible pricing, people are still paying for it. And it's selling out on a lot of rides almost every day, no matter what the price is. So it's hard to believe, as much as I personally would love to see us go back to that free model of fast passes. I don't see that going anywhere. I mean, there may be a restructuring of how the cost is a little bit, because even Iger's even said that some of the costs and things are too high even for his liking. But at the same point, who knows what it's going to be, because people are paying it. People are willing to spend the money. So who knows? Who knows what's going to truly happen with that? So
I think it's a good one to start with. And with that, I'll kind of pivot to Bob Iger's own words and what he discussed. A lot of our listeners may know that Bob Iger did a town hall with a lot of the employees, right, with a lot of the cast members. And one of the things he highlighted and made sure to talk about in there was that, yes, the customer experience, maybe we lost our way a little bit, right? We need to listen to our customers. He definitely talked about that. He also definitely talked about listening to the cast members, right, which I think is important. But in terms of revenue, he also talked about how we're not always going to make people happy, right? He went out of his way to make sure to say that, that not every decision is going to make everybody happy. And I think that is a key indicator, right? He knows that storytelling is important. He knows the cast members are important. He knows feedback from the guests are important. But he also knows that the revenue stream is just as important as any of the rest of those things, because you got to make the stockholders happy just as much. With that said, I do foresee a change to Genie. I do not foresee it going away. So, John, I agree with you. I think a lot of that is conjecture and rumor. But it is possible that the prices get lowered. That's certainly a possibility. Or it is a possibility that they find a way to bring more value with the price that you're paying, right? Maybe there's an extra, maybe you can pick two genies or three genies like you could with the fast pass in the past, rather than doing one at a time, right? But let's keep in mind that Disneyland had the Max Pass, which is not too different than Genie. The Max Pass was very similar in the sense that you would pay for the Max Pass, you would pick one ride at a time, and you couldn't pick your second ride until after you completed that first ride or that first attraction. That existed under Bob Iger in Disneyland. So there, to think that he's going to get rid of it, I think is probably pretty far-fetched. I don't know that that's going to be happening. But again, I do think it's possible that there will be more value added, because he does listen to the consumers. He does listen to what people have to say.
Yeah, one thing I would say that would make sense for them to add to the Genie that it is now is to bring in the Memory Maker, because that was with the Max Pass, where if you bought that, you would get the photos. And that definitely brought value to it. And a lot of folks at Disneyland actually enjoyed that and appreciated that and thought that was a great value, that you were getting your photos on top of paying for the rides. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
But something with annual pass holders too, right? That was an add-in for annual pass holders in the past as well. So it is a good call by you, John. That's something that Bob Iger has been overseeing that's added value in the past. Why wouldn't it add value again? I think that's a good call.
You know, what you picked up on is something that I've noticed over the years. Why they reinvent the wheel park to park is beyond me. I agree that Disneyland's version of Fast Pass and Max Pass was much superior. When I went to it, I said, oh, this is easier to understand, easier to use. I mean, this was years ago. And when it was time to introduce that concept of, you know, a premium access to Walt Disney World, they had the software, they had the solution. I don't know why they just didn't do it, right? But they didn't. They decided to come up with a whole new system. And I think the concern from the users is they're willing to pay the premium, but it has to be intuitive. It has to be user-friendly. It has to take care of itself. It can't disrupt your vacation that you're walking around with this thing in your hand planning all the time, or getting up at 7 a.m. in the morning, you know, to organize your day. Some people don't vacation that way, right? We know there's all kinds of people that want a vacation. It becomes an arduous task and everything. So you had a system that works, and we've talked about it this before. Why not just go to a all-in, like Universal style pass? You know, people would pay it, you know, and that would still help the revenue issue. But it's more of the looking at the product and what you're doing. You're trying to gain some revenue. You're trying to enhance the park experience for the guest. Are you doing both, right? You need to look at it from a business perspective. Am I achieving both? Because if there's a balance, I'm bringing value to my guest experience. And yes, they're willing to pay for that value, right? They're willing to pay for that upcharge, versus now it feels like you're being upcharged to have an inferior experience to the one you used to get for free, right? So that's where the complexities of the complaints come in, I think. I think we'll see him tweak it. I think we'll see him tweak it. I don't think we'll see him abolish it, but I think he'll come to, for that reason, for, you know, tweaking that Genie Plus. And I think that goes hand in hand with the park reservations for the parks. I don't think it's going to go away, but I think we'll see it, you know, tweak it. You know, that was a big change. They see value and financial value. Look at everything the parks are doing is helping cover the cost of where Disney Plus isn't getting it done as far as the streaming services. So they're not going to abolish it, but, you know, keeping the same price and making them more user-friendly or more flexible. I think we'll see that with those types of products. And I think you have to throw the Park Hopper in there too, right?
Yeah, let's talk about just Park Pass reservations and Park Hoppers in the same breath. I think it makes sense to do that. I will say, I've never really seen Dizzy do the pay Peter, pay Paul and take away from Peter or whatever, right? So yes, as a company overall, you have to have profits in some areas if you're having losses in the other areas. But I want to be clear that I don't think you're saying, Carl, and I don't think we are either, that like they're taking money from one and giving it to the other, right?
No, I'm just saying one business unit is more successful than the other. Right?
Exactly. So just for people that are listening.
Yes, sure, correct. Thank you. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So with that said, Park Pass reservations, I think, are the easiest thing for them to abolish if they want to abolish something, right? Because you're not paying for a Park Pass reservation, right? You're just the annoyance of making a Park Pass reservation. And I have a client that's traveling right now, as we're talking actually, that's frustrated because they went, their daughter is huge fan of Magic Kingdom. It's their first time ever going. We set up for them to go to each park, right? I mean, any time you go down, you should try to visit all four parks to understand. They don't want to do Animal Kingdom. They just want to do another day at Magic Kingdom. They can't, right? Mm-hmm. So that's upsetting the user experience. I think that's a very easy thing for them to abolish. Or at minimum, like you said, the Park Hopper, getting rid of the 2 p.m. Timing. They did it for years, right? With less capacity, because no matter what people think, they've admitted they're still not back to pre-COVID attendance yet. They came out and said that just a couple months ago.
And right? They're not to pre-COVID staffing either.
Right.
And a lot of attendance.
Which they're working on, right? But that's one of the reasons why they still have the park.
They go together, right? They go together. You can't do one without the other. So,
but you could do it with park hoppers, right? Because you're still staffing up. And if you need to shift people, it's not too hard for you to put people in a different outfit and run them over to Epcot, right? Like you really probably could do that. If you could create a team of people that are cross-trained in certain areas to be able to do that if you want.
Yeah. So factually, from what my understanding from Crescent employees, the only staff that really is cross-trained to do that is there's two groups. One is custodial services, right? Because that's pretty consistent from park to park to park. And knowing where the nearest place to get rid of that is relative. And the other one is characters. The character experience, okay? The character experience is not a really mass volume of headcount as it is, you know, you're really not shifting that much over. You're not going to have extra characters because there's more attendance in there, right? You're going to have that same plan out, but they could be working multiple parks. The custodial, you could shift that staff around easily. Logistically, it's very difficult for you to be doing a quick service in Adventureland, and then they say, I need you at the counter service of the fest house at Beer Garden to get all the way over there, make a costume change. That's a logistic nightmare, right?
Yeah, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying at a drop of a hat, right? But you could be like, hey, in the afternoon, we need to shift some people. So at lunch, you know, you get an extra 30 minutes to make sure you get this done. We'll put you on a bus. We'll get you over there. I'm not saying it's a perfect solution. I'm just saying things like that are things that they could start to do to cover that. Either way, I don't think they need to, right? Like that's the other thing. All four of the parks are busy enough right now that you know you're not going to pull people out of Magic Kingdom no matter what, right? And you because Magic Kingdom's always going to be busy. And I'm sure they have enough data to show where people are going, you know, and they have enough trends to know, okay, we need to staff this area at this time. I guess all I'm really saying is that the park pass or the park hopper is probably also very easy for them to get rid of, to make people happy, to make people feel like they're getting more bang for their buck, but also to soften the blow of the park pass reservation system. Because now you don't have to check into whatever park that you were supposed to go to first. Or if you do, you don't have to wait until 2 o'clock, right? So it's just a pain point for people that are like, well, okay, I'll spend the extra money for the park hopper. If it'll get me in that park, but I don't want to have to sit at Magic Kingdom for 4 hours or drive to Magic Kingdom just to turn around and drive back, right? That I think that's I think that's kind of where I'm going with that. It's easier done.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I mean, the time on this, I mean, they can easily adjust that time. And I get why they do the time that they do as 2 p.m. Because a lot of that, too, is to kind of help mitigate some of the crowds, because a lot of folks will start in the park in the morning. They'll go back to the resort and then realize, I don't really want to do something, or just kind of hang around the resort. But if they shifted the time a little bit, and again, this is kind of a moot point on this, but I think they shift that a little bit, that time, I think the value is going to be better. I know myself, I've just recently purchased a park hopper for a upcoming trip. And for what our plan is, it doesn't really affect me too much, because it actually works itself out better. But at the same point, it kind of sucks, because originally when I did the plan, I was like, oh yeah, it's a 2 p.m. change. Okay, this kind of limits me and kind of really dictates my day. I do think that's going to change. I really do.
That's only because we screwed you up and said, come on, John, play golf with us in the middle of the day.
Well, I mean, yes, but at the same point, I'm not going to pass up a round of golf with the two of you. So
yeah. So I think it's simple. Even if you don't want to get rid of it, you can move it back to noon. Again, that's what they do at Disneyland.
Right.
Noon is much easier. You can stomach, if you're not going to get rid of it, you can stomach going for 4 hours in the morning and then at lunch being able to skip, right? It seems to be that extra couple hours where you're just like, I just don't want to be here right now. You know, this isn't where I want to be anymore.
The other thing that he's hoping to bring back, and I think he will, because this is tied to revenue, is, you know, the restrictions on the annual passes.
Yeah.
That's a big one, both in California and Florida, right? You think he'll do it?
I don't think it matters that much to Florida, to be honest with you. Sorry for anybody that listens that's an annual pass holder in Florida. You just don't have as much say as you think you say, because the business in Florida is revenue driven by tourists. It's not driven by you, the locals. Yes, every dollar counts. Yes, you spend money there when you come, but you can go five times into Magic Kingdom and spend less than I do on one trip coming from Chicago, because you're not staying in a resort. You're not eating all the food that's there. You know, you're not buying all the merchandise that I'm going to buy when I'm there. Right. So, you know, they have to fill those resort rooms too. So they're going to keep that perks more towards the tourists. Disneyland, it's a bigger deal. Disneyland makes up at least 50% of the daily attendance in those parks, and those I know several people who gave up their annual pass holders status in Disneyland because it was too expensive with too many blackout dates. Right? They tried to shift and kind of do things the way they would do in Florida and in Anaheim, and it doesn't work that way. It's not tourist driven. There's only three hotels that are owned by Disney on property, you know, and two of them are DVC resorts.
So Florida, you know, drives the attendance by tourism. Anaheim, it's been statistically shown, they're driving their attendance through the convention business. There's huge convention centers and convention hotels all around there. That's a draw for people. And you go to the convention, you bring your family and tag along. And while you're in the meetings, they're in the parks. And then you maybe take an extra day and go to the park, right? So that really drives a lot of that business, because it's a 1 or 2 day experience for most people, especially repeat visitors, right? So that's how they drive that revenue. And in that case, they're not getting the revenue from the hotels, right? So I agree. I think with what you said about Florida, it's accurate too. You know, there's also been an interesting study that's come out that since the annual passes have not been there, Florida residents are spending more money attending Disney Springs, the restaurants at the hotels, the activities at the hotels, fishing, golf, and all that stuff is up because they want to go enjoy Disney, get a taste and flavor of it, but they haven't renewed their pass and they're finding other ways to have the Disney experience. There's enough character meals outside the park, right? So they can still get their taste and flavor of things by having a day of leisure, going here, there, drinking around the world, but not inside a park, right? So I think the revenue's still coming in to Florida, right, from those sources, because there's a pent up demand.
More revenue is coming in, not even just still coming in, but more revenue is coming in. And I will say, that I do think right now, for the most part, and I'm not an annual pass holder because I should be, but I'm not. Whenever I look, that I always seem to be able to find park pass reservations for annual pass holders right now. So they're not getting left out of the parks, which makes me think that the next logical step is actually to reopen annual pass sales, right? They're going to reopen annual pass sales, and hopefully they keep them open and they don't lock them out like they have the last few years, so that people can continue to buy them. But I think that's the more likely change to annual passes more than anything. Yeah, you could see some more value tacked back on. You could get your, you know, memory maker added back on, or whatever the case, free parking or whatever it is, you know, that kind of stuff could come back for sure. But in the end, I think the biggest change is going to be the reselling of annual passes.
Yeah. The other thing that fans are wishfully hoping that Bob Iger will wave his magic wand and reinstate is that free airport shuttle. What do you say, dudes? Is that coming back?
Nope.
You know why? It hasn't stopped people from going, right? The parks are busy. They're not back to pre-pandemic levels, but they're also stopping it from being back to pre-pandemic levels right now. Magic Kingdom is still selling out, even though it's not at the same capacity it used to be at for a sellout. So there's still demand enough to where I go to try to find last minute trips for people and the resorts are booked in full and I just can't do it, right? So no, I don't think people have turned out to be just fine with Uber or Mears Connect or whatever those services are.
Yeah, there's options in there. They're affordable. Let's be honest. Like you said, Uber, Lyft, Mears, and other options. It's not like you're stranded when you get to Orlando International. You have options, and it's not that bad. And I'm sorry, the cost was built into your trip in the first place. It wasn't free. Let's be honest here. We all know that that cost is built into your trip. So you're paying it either way. You're just paying it built into the price initially anyways. So it's not that much of a difference.
Look, it's not coming back. You're both right. There's no discussion about it from a business perspective. The other reality of it served its purpose, right? For a while, the concept was, I'm going to Disney. Do I rent a car or not? Right? Because Disney has this wonderful internal transportation system. Well, when they introduced the free shuttle to your hotels, well, that's free. Why would I want to rent a car? And Disney was smart because once you got on campus, you were going to spend all your extra money on campus, that big 40 square miles. If you had a car, you were going to drive to see the competition. You're going to drive somewhere else for dinner, right? So they got more of your spend, the return on their investment for that free shuttle. And what do? They had it for so many years, 5, 10 years. They just trained people to stay on Disney. That it's more conducive and easy to stay as Disney. It's more magical. You get 24 hours of Disney. So now that's ingrained enough that you don't need that bus ride to entice people to do it. It's part of their philosophy on the vacation.
And let's be honest, right? You now have the invention of Uber and Lyft, which did not exist when they signed those original contracts. Right. Uber and Lyft basically do the same thing, but you pay for it. They drop you off. You still don't have a rental car. Right. So yeah, you had taxis before, but whoever really likes riding in a taxi? Uber is like part of normal everyday life now. You know, my people Carl's age use Uber, you know, so like, why not?
No, I used to, the first time I used Uber, a friend introduced me at a convention in Vegas, and it was Uber just came out. It was black cars only. And I was like, this is great. I had six dudes. We're in Vegas, want to go somewhere? That's two taxis. He's like, no, get this Uber. This big Suburban pulls up. We all jump in. Nice, new, classy car, clean smell. I said, I'm sold. I'm never in a taxi again. And to this day, I've never been in a taxi.
Yeah, and me neither. Once Uber came out, I stopped being in taxis too. And if I'm with my family, hey, I just need an Uber with a car seat. No problem. Or a booster. No problem, especially in Orlando. Right? Then you got Mears Connect. Mears Connect is what? Like 25, 26 bucks round trip per person? Like,
forget about it.
A rental car is going to cost you 700 to 800 bucks for the week. That's you're still saving money by doing that, a crap load of money by doing that. And again, you're still on property and stuck on property for the entirety of your trip. So,
all right, we solved that problem and we know Bob's not going to bring back that. Now, okay, we're food dudes. Let's get on to the food question, John. Is Iger going to bring back the dining plan, in your opinion?
I don't know. This one I'm torn with. This one, I'm not really 100% sure, to be honest with you. I see the value in it for us, the consumer, but I also see the issue for Disney with it, because the revenue that they're losing on food by having people buy that kind of is that starting to outweigh some of the value of it. I mean, the value is there for us, the consumer, but not for Disney, because historically you really do get a good deal on the dining plan. You really do. So
I'm going to disagree with you. Go ahead, Carl.
I was going to say, that's why they love you, John.
Right. Yeah.
you've been hoodwinked again.
Yep, you've been hoodwinked for sure. Bob Iger will get back to it just as soon as humanly possible. In my opinion, because number one, they have to restaff. They need to make sure it's safe to have buffets back up and running so that you can get people in and out of the restaurants quickly. That's one. Okay. Number two, it's very lucrative for Disney, because people like us, the three of us, know how to maximize the value of that pass. Yes. The average Disney consumer has no freaking clue how to maximize the value of that pass. You will go and get a Mickey pretzel as one of your snacks, which is going to cost you $4 or whatever, going to cost them $4, instead of getting the beignets that cost you $7, right? So every time you do that, that's $3 in the mouse's pockets, right? You think about the thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people that do that, that money stacks up real fast. When you're talking buffet foods, buffets tend to be extremely lucrative because people pay, you know, $65 for a character meal or the value within a dining plan for that. But most people's eyes are bigger than their stomachs, so they don't eat all the food at the buffet. They don't eat as much as they want to. Now, fat dudes like us, yeah, we're going to hit it two or three times, right? But my kid's going to pay $39.99 for a buffet meal, you know, basically through that. And my kid's going to go up and have a couple of eggs and a half a piece of toast, right? Like, that's it. So again, super lucrative for Disney. I honestly think I think Chapek would have brought it back too. It's just a matter of staffing at this point.
It is staffing, and you have to have every single restaurant open, right? Because that's the other capacity. You have to have choices so that the favorite one you've want to sign up for and get, it's not there. Well, where am I going to go use my dining plan? You know, I wanted to eat in this park or in this hotel complex. I got to have them all open so I can leverage that.
And we're close to that.
Close to that. And the other thing that's a dead giveaway is, if you've read a lot of the trades, they said it's coming back everywhere. It's titled on the website, temporarily unavailable.
Right.
You go and see the menus. It's still there. The logos for the dining plans are still at the marquees. When you check at the restaurant, it's coming back, right?
It's still on the booking website. Even it's just listed as temporarily unavailable.
So it's coming back. And I agree with you, Ryan. I agree with you that I would have come back regardless of Iger's return. You know, other things that are, you know, I don't want to go on too much of these things. You know, there's some topics I certainly will steer away from. You know, questioning Iger's politics versus Chapek's politics. We don't need to get into that in this show. Yeah. But it's anything that's free or lower prices. I think all of these rumors, you know, I wish it's going to be lower prices. They're going to stop charging for magic bands. Like I said, the bus coming back. I think we can all say, kiss that goodbye, right?
Yeah. If anything, they're going to make it easier for you to do some of those things so that the perceived value is higher, but I don't see the costs going away. The one thing I think might come back a little bit, I think this doesn't affect us too much, but I'm going to say it because it's a topic people are probably going, are they going to talk about it? DVC. I think there's going to be more value to DVC people. I think honestly, that'll be a big change where money will come back into DVC people's pockets. DVC people are winked in for 50 years, right? So they're going to, okay, we'll up your gifts and you'll get nicer gifts and maybe a better perk here or there because you're DVC. Beyond that, I don't really see a lot of changes to the pricing. I don't see a lot of changes. Maybe again, it's value add. That's where Iger was always good, is value add. What value are you getting for that price? And I think ultimately that's what truthfully the people want. most people don't get up, never got upset that they raised the prices. Most people got upset that they raised the prices. They took away the fast passes. They took away the Magic Express. They took away this, they took away that, you know, paying more money and getting less. That's the perceived value. So I think Bob Iger is smart enough to know that that's what he needs to change, is just that perceived value.
Right. So let's go on to the next section, right? I really think that Iger was behind the whole streaming concept, right? And that's a big part of the business. It was planned to be. Whether it's growing as quick as they wanted to, whether it's as lucrative as they wanted to, whether they can grow it to where they ultimately thought, I think is a big question. I think that is going to be a big part of what we see from here. Because he's only got 2 years. That was his baby. I think he needs to look at that. And I think that may lend itself to one of the successors. You know, I don't think we're talking about the successors at the end here, but I don't think that even though the park's a very profitable unit, there's a lot more revenue potential and it's a lot more diverse company when you get into all the entertainment media, right? There's a lot of other things that are out there. And so I think, you know, the question becomes, what do you think he's going to do now that he's back, as he puts Disney Plus streaming under the microscope?
Well, if we're going to talk media, I think we need to talk about more than just Disney Plus or Hulu, right? I think we need to talk about Marvel. We need to talk about Fox. We need to talk about The Simpsons. We need to talk about...
It's all there. Yeah, it's all there.
All the IPs that Disney acquired, because that's who Bob Iger is. Above all else, he's a deal maker. That's who he is. That's what he's been known for. You know, you look at what Disney's acquired under his name, it's honestly ridiculous. It's phenomenal what he was able to accomplish between Marvel and Pixar and, you know, Fox. And the list goes on, right? He's already come out, and for Marvel fans, you know, which is important both to Disney Plus and also to the movies, right? For Marvel fans, which is a huge section of Disney right now, he's already come out and said, we need to start sacrificing quantity for quality, which is what every single Marvel fan wants to hear.
Yes.
He's already come out and said that. So that's very telling that he's basically looked at this and said, we're going to stop just putting crap on Disney Plus just because we need to fill it up with Marvel stuff, right? Now, I was entertained by most everything, but there was a significant dip in what was happening with Marvel when Bob Iger left. There's no doubt about that. Whether that was because Chapek had his hands in there, or whether it was just not going in a good direction, who knows? But I think that's where you're going to see a big shift, right? You're going to start seeing the content become more quality again, and driving those box office numbers up, which is also going to drive up those numbers on the Disney Plus subscribers, right? I think that's to me, between Star Wars and Marvel, I think that's where you're going to see it more than anything. And I think you're going to see more of the Mandalorian type of stuff and more of those types of shows coming on to Disney Plus. And you're going to see less of the shows that were very obviously supposed to be movies that they just cut up into shows and put on Disney Plus. I think those will actually shift to become box office movies again. So that's me.
I agree. That's one part of the content. He's been talking about quality. Yeah. I think the fan base is encouraged by that.
Yeah.
And I would agree that he's going to bring back that. One of the things he was known was for the quality, right? And I think that's a good management tactic that he will use, that he previously used successfully. Okay. Doesn't always work for everything, right? A lot of boomerang CEOs, when this happens, go back, oh, let's go back to the basics and do what I always did. That's a danger for him, right? The content piece of it, I agree. That's a quality thing that will drive the revenue. But the other piece that he did can really drag organizations backwards. All right. If he starts to go for more acquisitions, or if he starts to spin too many things off to get a cash flow in, that's, you know, because he is a deal maker, some of those old tactics right now could drag the organization back from it. So I agree with the creative content and getting that in. And look, at part of that was, you know, the decision to move Imagineering and everything from California to Florida. There's a crossover in that group in what they produce for content and movies as they do for the parks. If you move them, if you move that division out, there's a lot of crossover between what happens up in Burbank and down in Anaheim. You know, if you move what goes on in Anaheim all the way out to Florida, you're going to lose some of the creative juices that go on from the movie side. So you got to be careful about that. And part of that has been thinking about let's slow down on that move of the Imagineers out to Florida, right? That he's kind of put the brakes on that. Let's reevaluate that, because I think he is a good content guy. So I think that part of the business, I think he will go in and his old tactics will be useful. My concern is some of his old tactics at deal making. If he did one more acquisition, it could really crush the company. I don't think he will. That's not what they brought him back for, right? But yeah, that's my concern in a boomerang CEO.
And the opposite goes true too, right? There's a lot of talk out there about Apple, right? There's been a lot of talk about Apple, and he's already squashed that. But just for the sake of discussing it here, for those who heard the news and then stopped paying attention, he's not going to sell Disney to Apple. It's not going to happen. Everybody thought like, oh, he's got these connections and whatever. That's not going to happen. Disney can self-sustain on itself without Apple.
I'm not going to lie, being a diehard Apple fanatic that I am myself, I think it would be cool, but the two companies, honestly, they don't belong together. I mean, I would love to see Disney consult Apple with some technology to bring some stuff into the parks using some of the Apple stuff. That itself would be really cool. And I could see that happening with new ride designs, new concepts, possible new parks, all that stuff down the line. That would be absolutely incredible to see that stuff, because we're at a stage in life that the VR, AI, stuff like that, it fits perfectly in with that right now. It really, truly does.
I think, John, you hit the nail on the head. I think it's more likely that there's going to be a collaboration there than there is going to be an acquisition there. I couldn't have said it any better. Between the VR, like, how cool would it be to have Disney VR stuff? Like, how cool would it be to experience Pirates of the Caribbean in VR, right? Like something like that. How cool would it be to experience the parks without having to leave your couch? You know, rather than watching YouTube and watching some of the great YouTubers out there that do that kind of stuff, you know, how great would it be to be able to just sit on your couch and walk around Magic Kingdom? You know, that'd be super cool. So I do foresee that kind of stuff being more likely, although I don't know, maybe not too. We'll see, but it's more likely than them selling it to Apple.
Yeah, look, there's got to be some sort of a strategy that's looking beyond the 2 years for Disney. Wall Street was enamored with an ounce of him coming back, but the stock is right back down today to where it was before they announced he was coming back, right? So that's really had no impact. It's less than 2 months, that swing of the stock. Everything on the stock and the company's growth has got to be forward-looking on what's going to happen next. Here's one thing I'll throw out to you. One of the things that could happen is the announcement that he stays beyond 2 years. What are your thoughts on that? You know, either from a likelihood perspective or what it might mean long-term to the company.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it definitely could happen. I mean, 2 years in the sense of business, that's not a whole lot of time. That's really not. Because he's going to spend these first 6 months trying to organize and clean up and restructure a lot of things. So he's losing that right out the gate. And then to try to come up with the concepts, come up with a game plan and all that, that's taking time. So in all honesty, he really has a year. He really has a year to get things back on track. So I think there will be an extension, maybe a year, another 2 years. But beyond that, I don't think we see him that much longer. I mean, in all honesty, 4 years is, I think, what we see.
The reason I throw that out there is that, you know, his sole purpose was announced to come back and select the next Bob Iger. And wouldn't it be funny if the next Bob Iger was Bob Iger?
That would be right out of the Jungle Cruise, really, ultimately. Bob Iger would like to announce you to his successor, Bob Iger. Right? He's 71 years old. He's still very sharp, right? There's no question about it, right? So you could apparently lead a nation at 71 years old, right?
Apparently,
so,
yeah.
Why can't you lead Walt Disney World? So I do think it's possible, like John said, maybe it's turns into a 4-year or a 5-year deal maximum. At that point, he's 76. I don't think he wants to do it anymore. He stepped away initially because he wanted to be more with his family. Now, maybe that backfired on him, right? That happens to a lot of people in retirement.
Every executive, when they get to whatever age and they're out, they're always say, oh, it's to spend more time with the family. But believe me. So, right. So look at, let's dive into that, right? I think we've covered well all the components and the variables in here, but he is brought in to select the next Bob Iger or his successor. Now he's got to kind of know who they are. So certainly there's some people politicking and vying for those positions, and he's got to groom them to not make the mistakes that his predecessor made, right? So that's part of his stewardship to the company, right? Why he was brought back is you've got to right the ship and get the right person in control. So there's a lot of rumors about who this might be. I thought I'd throw out some names out there as discussions, and we can think yes, no, or maybe on who his successor might be. Okay, dudes?
All right.
The one that comes up very often, we got to start with Josh D'Amaro. He's the present chairman of Disney Parks, Experience and Products, and he took over the role of Chapek when he became CEO. So he's been around since 1998, not a really long time at Disney, but substantial. And he is very much a fan favorite, right, wrong, or indifferent. The fans are favorites. It's starting to change a little bit, but.
Right. I was going to say he was a fan favorite until Chapek came in, and then all of a sudden he wasn't a fan favorite anymore. Right.
Which
begs the question, was that a Chapek problem or was that a Josh D'Amaro problem? Chances are it was probably a Chapek problem.
We think, but a lot of people on the inside say, no, be careful. It's, he's a better looking Bob Chapek. So, so that's the thing is, is that a case? What do you think of likelihood that he gets tapped and groomed?
I'd say it's a possibility, to be honest with you. I mean, it seems like he's been talked about more than anybody else. And it even was before that when Iger was originally retiring here, he was in that talk to replace Iger at that point too. So the likelihood is, I'd say, fairly good. And again, people seem to like him. People seem to bring a lot of respect to him. But at the same point, there's now other people that are really starting to show interest in that conversation. So I'd say it's a 50-50 shot, to be honest with you.
I think he's the leader in the clubhouse. I think he has to be, right? Like if Vegas was putting odds on this, which, yes, I checked, they're not, right?
Not yet.
Not yet, at least. Although sports gambling is something we may want to talk about in all of this, by the
way. No, and that's kind of what I was going to, is to his next pick. But right. Go ahead.
Okay, so the one thing that Iger keeps coming back to is understanding that Disney is a storytelling company. That's at its root, right? And I don't know that anybody in that company or anybody that's being discussed knows that better than Josh D'Amaro, right? So for me, that's the reason why I would put him maybe as the leader of the clubhouse, but I don't know. It's not a given. It's not a given, right? Disney has traditionally also gone outside of Disney to find their CEOs. They haven't always promoted from within to that position, right? So there's no guarantee that it could be somebody that's at Disney already or with the Disney affiliate already, which means it could come totally out of left field.
Let's go through another one. Okay, so we mentioned gambling, and I'm going to mention this because in the content, remember that Iger came from the TV side of the business, right, and moved his way up the ranks. So he's got two lieutenants in that side. Jimmy Pitaro is the one I was referring to. He's, you know, he's been leading ESPN since 2010, right? So, and he came from that side. He's been the chairman of all the sports content. And a lot of that is centered around the revenues they're getting for advertisers who are in the gambling business is substantial now. They're the number one advertisers in ESPN, right? So they've drawn into that revenue and they've toyed. Disney has toyed with the, into getting into that business, right? Into getting into the gambling business and the licensing of it. So that's something to think of. But he's a pretty steady guy. And because they're like-minded on the TV side, I could see that potentially. Equally on that level with him is the other TV influencer, and that's Dana Walden. So Dana Walden is the chairman of Disney's general entertainment content, right? So another content person, which he's big on, and you know, everything associated with that. And again, both of those two have been pretty steady, proven leaders, not too political on every side. They come from that TV side, so they certainly could be transferred in, and they know, understand content, and they could be transferred into that big revenue giant that they're hoping for, the content piece, right? So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts one way or another on Jimmy or Dana.
So I don't have an opinion on either one of those folks, but one thing I can say is working within the media business now, again, I'm nowhere near top anything at all, but a lot of those folks that come from media and go into a different area within that, they're not as successful as they are in the area that they came from. So let's be honest here. I look at a lot of this stuff too as a very hypercritical view. And yes, ESPN's made a lot of changes over the past couple of years with everything, especially with how they're bringing their ad revenue and everything. But let's be honest too, the ESPN content, it's gotten a lot worse, to be honest with you. It has gotten a lot worse from the perspective of quality and content. It's literally rinse, wash, repeat. So do we really want to see Disney do that whole rinse, wash, repeat again? So
I think that's why ESPN's losing subscribers on the cable side too. But again, they've, you know, it's been packaged elsewhere.
But a lot of they never came out with ESPN 8, the Ocho. They should have come out with the Ocho, but they never did.
I mean, you got it occasionally. You got it here and there from time to time. But let's be honest too, though, in sports media, there hasn't been a new big change of anything in years. People have tried, but it always ends up to be the exact same thing of the exact same content. So,
all right. Another content leader I'll throw out you guys for discussion. And I'm going to say right up front, I don't think he's got a chance, but he comes from something that you guys are paying attention to. So maybe I'm wrong. Alan Bergman's the chairman of Disney Studios content. He's been around since 96, president of Disney Studios for about 4 or 5 years. And he runs all the blockbusters from Marvel, Pixar, and Star Wars over the last decade. So getting back to what you were saying, Ryan, if it's about content and what's going on there, and Iger's going to fix that, Alan's going to be his right-hand man to fix some of those things. And so will working on those projects put Alan close enough to Iger for him to consider him for the ultimate role of CEO?
It's a good question. I mean, some of the content's been controversial, right? You know, majority of Star Wars fans, I think wrongly, but that's my opinion, do not like the Star Wars content that's been produced since Disney took over. I think a number of people are not huge fans of some of the other things Bergman did, like the live action remakes, right? So some of it's been, but you flip it on the other side, which is what Disney's really known for, which is the animation stuff, right? And that stuff has been wildly popular. For the most part, you know, the Encantos, for instance, and that kind of stuff, he's overseen all of that. So I think it's a good pick. I honestly think it's probably, he'd probably be in the top three if we're looking at likely replacements. You know, a huge edge over Josh Tomorrow is exactly that content creation, because there hasn't been a lot of that from Josh. He hasn't had to do a lot of creativity. You know, it's really just handling the parks and how they run and how they operate. So I think that gives him an edge in some ways. It's easy for us as huge fans of the Parks to want to see the Parks be a big reason, but I think you're right. Ultimately, I don't think it is. I don't think it's the deciding factor. So yeah, I think Bergman is, I think he's more likely than anybody from ESPN or anything like that.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you're right, because especially if he's going to be working close in hand with them content, they're going to get exposed to each other and there's going to be a comfort level. Right. And that may be a way for him to cozy up into it. My only reason, even though Iger thinks that's important, we agree it's all important, fans do. Producing quality and creative content right now is not the biggest problem. There's other problems, right? So the question becomes, just because you got somebody who's good at fixing one problem as a CEO, can they address the other issues? And that would be the consideration if I'm Iger trying to pick Bergman. He solves a big problem, but what is his skill number? Yet to be determined. Maybe they're excellent, right? Maybe his other skill levels are excellent, but they're not exposed. They're not well known. They're not recognized within the Disney family. So that would be the only thing I think pulling him back out of the lead. I think he's a good candidate too. The candidate that scares me the most
is Jonathan Mackey.
Hey, all right. Wow. I was not aware that I was in the running, but okay.
There has not been a good CEO who was previously a CFO of the company since Roy Disney. You know, after Walt, Roy was the number one chairman and CEO. He accomplished Walt's dream and, you know, passed away 2 weeks after getting it done, right? So that was, you know, a big fan favorite as far as if you wanted to rank the popularity of CEOs. Roy is number two, Walt's brother. And he was, you know, all the stories historically about the money and getting the money to do. He's brilliant about getting it, but also used to get in fights with Walt about money. Right now, it's return on investment for stockholders. And we know that's the bottom line with business. Christine McCarthy is their CFO right now. She's only been with Disney since 2000, so she's a relatively new kid on the block. And what Disney needs to do right now more than anything else is get the stock price back up. And that makes that, in order to do that, you have to make streaming business possible. Okay. And so Christine can look at the company holistically as far as the whole cost structure of the entire company. But I think she's going to fall into the traps that Chapek did, that Josh did, and all the cutting back. You know, some of her comments and recent conference calls have been not fan favorite conference call stuff. They've been totally, you know, groomed towards the money. So that's why she scares me. But, you know, without any creative experience and only being a money person, you know, that was Roy, but he still had deferred and respect to what his brother did. I don't think she's got the discipline to do that. So that's why she scares me.
I think she scares me for one reason and one reason only. And that's if I'm making a CFO, the CEO, I'm waiting for pieces to be sold off, right? That's it. If she becomes CEO, I think the next big thing you see is you see a major move like a Star Wars or a Marvel being sold to somebody else.
Yep.
Because generate cash flow, you know, get rid of jobs, essentially get rid of overhead. And that's the first thing that's going to happen. I think that's just general business too. That's just not Disney, right? I most times when you see a company get sold to a bank and be operated by a bank or a CFO, that's usually not a good sign. That's usually a sign of like, they're either going to try to build it up so they can sell it off to somebody else, or they're just going to start getting rid of pieces. I don't foresee that happening. I really don't, for that reason. Unless the board is ready to wash their hands of it, right? Unless the board's ready to give it away.
And that's why I'd rather see when I start to balance the executive skills and the content thing, I'd rather see Dana Waldman get it.
Yeah,
I think she's better suited because she's got the balance of that, but she does have this fiscal discipline as well. But she's going to have the effective balance of that. And I think she does want the content as a whole, some of her philosophy on how she approached it. She's really assimilated into it. So if I had to have my pick between Cindy and Dana, I would be all over voting for Dana. So I don't know. I don't know if it's going to come down to those two or someone we mentioned. And, you know, is there an outsider? Is there a dark horse outside that we're not recognizing? There's a few people, but I don't know. One of them is, will they bring in someone for the outside?
Yeah. I wouldn't even, number one, my guess is even if we brought up some of those names, people would be like, huh, who?
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know that we need to go down that path. Is it possible? Yes, they've done it before. You know, they could do it again. And that is another, in my mind, potential almost desperation type move, right? It's certainly possible. But I don't know. We'll put the odds up on our social media. $5 minimum bets made payable to Dudes Dish Disney. And, winners will be paid out within 30 days of the announcement.
Less the VIG.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. We're going to take a little off the top. Don't you worry about it. But yeah.
So forget about it. All right. So
processing fees.
if they announced something cool, another park, another attraction, something cool like that, because they haven't announced it in a long time, and Iger would be the guy to do it, and people would say, yeah, see, that's why we have him back. I think that would create a nice distraction for the fan base. So if you create a distraction for the fan base, that you can start gaining the popularity of the people on the team again and say the ship's been righted, there's consumer confidence to be considered. That may translate into more money. So that might be a good thing. What makes me less excited about being him is the guy who picked the wrong guy and didn't do well, you brought him back to pick another guy. So he hasn't been really proven as good at picking a successor. So you're bringing him back to pick a successor, right? Usually what happens in business is that when the successor that's chosen doesn't do well, the board makes a change, right? The board makes a change to oust that person and put someone in the interim while the board goes out and seeks and interviews someone. So that's the part that mixes my emotions with his nervousness. I think he'll, as he said in the town hall, you know, bring back some consumer confidence that may translate into some money that may impact the stock price. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. It's all about that stock price.
If I'm a Disney CM, I'm excited because I think focus is going to be put back on me, right? Where it's been lost for a couple of years. As a Disney parks goer and a Disney consumer, I'm excited for the idea of Bob Iger coming back, but I'm realistic in the fact that I don't think that much is going to change in his tenure. So, Carl, I share what you say is I'm more nervous, not necessarily because it's Bob Iger, but because I know it's temporary, right? I'm more nervous about what's next. I'm more nervous about even if they do announce an expansion, they were going to do stuff to Epcot when Bob Iger was in charge that didn't happen, right? Like the next CEO can take whatever it is that was announced and just scrap it. So, you know, that stuff makes me nervous from that perspective. But overall, I think I do think it was the right move to bring him back. If he's 71 years old and he's been retired for a couple of years and still very clearly involved, right? It's obvious he's been involved or he's been talking to the right people. He's passionate about it. He's not coming out of retirement for the money. He doesn't need the money. So he's got passion. That's what's exciting me about it for the next 2 years. Whatever he's going to do is going to be with a true passionate heart towards the benefit of the Walt Disney Company. So, I'll leave it at that. That's important to me. So hopefully it works out.
Well, there you have it, dudes. It's a brand new year and a brand new old CEO. And until next time, later, dudes.
Later, dudes.
Later, dudes.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Dudes Dish Disney. please check us out on social media. On Facebook at Dudes Dish Disney. On Instagram at Dudes Dish Disney. On Twitter at Disney_Dish. Please visit our sponsor, Magic Vacations, at magicvacations.net. More than just a travel agency, Magic Vacations has over 60 Magic Vacation planners committed to bringing you white glove concierge service. Using a Magic Vacation planner allows you to spend more time making memories and less time worrying about the details. For all of your Disney, Universal, cruise, and global travel, go to magicvacations.net. Magic Vacations. Discover the magic of travel.